Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com,
a production of Serotech Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 111 for June 4th, 2012. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Ricky Inger.
I'm Joe Steinkamp.
All right. Well, you know, the big event for the week of June 4th is my birthday, because that's June 5th. So send those cards and letters virtually, would you?
Mine
was on Tuesday.
Happy birthday to you too, Patrick. Yes.
We promised virtual cake. Weren't we talking about that last week?
We did. Virtual refreshments.
End of the month.
That's right.
The end of the month is a sweet spot, because the end of the month is where you can get gifts every 6 months. See, that's the great thing about my birthday at the end of June is that I can see gifts every 6 months. It's awesome. It is like the perfectly strategically placed one. Now, my wife's birthday is over by Valentine's Day, and I've been actually forbidden from ever doing a combination gift.
Uh-huh.
My father's is the week after Christmas. That one. I'm sorry, December people.
Mine is on Pi Day, so that means I can get cake and pie.
There you go. See, that worked out perfect.
Well, speaking of gifts, Microsoft gave us one this week.
Yeah, early.
An
entire day early.
Yeah. Wonder if they're just so excited they couldn't hold it off a day. I wonder what was up with the day early thing.
I'm sure they want to get out in front of WWDC and Apple. You know, it just gives them another day of press before everybody goes, hey, what did Tim Cook say in about a week and a half? So it's good that it's coming out. It's the release preview. We used to call this thing called release candidate back in my day, release preview of Windows 8. So for those of you playing at home, we had the tech preview, which was the developer's copy back in September. And then what was it, around February, January, February-ish, we had the consumer preview. And now we have the release preview. And the next step would be RTM, a release to manufacturing. And that's kind of the gold master of sorts that goes out to Dell and Gateway and all the other companies that make computers. And then after that, and I think the RTM will probably happen late August or early September, then after that, we'll be able to buy it in the stores come October. So those who didn't think it was going to happen, Microsoft said it was going to happen within 3 years. That was their current release schedule, and it will be almost 3 years to the day from Windows 7's release this October when Windows 8 arrives in stores.
A couple of things have changed with this version, and they say, I'm a little bit confused because they say, you're pretty much looking at what the release candidate is going to be, except we still have some major changes to do before the release candidate. So I'm not entirely sure what that means.
They'll probably change things in the store and things like that. I mean,
so basically cosmetic features you think they're going to change?
That's my guess. They've said that there's still one or two features, in fact, that they don't want to talk about yet.
Right.
So that makes a lot of sense, too, because I'm quite sure everybody's jostling for position with Mountain Lion coming around the corner, and other things happening. And they still have to make sure all the hardware. I'm already seeing things about the new Ultrabooks from Intel and touch-based stuff and more computers coming with solid-state drives or SSD drives instead of platter drives. We have an article actually here in the show notes from Ars Technica that talks about the minimum requirements Microsoft is starting to talk about with Windows 8. And it's really funny because they're like, you know, if you're running a Windows 7 on a computer now, you should be able to run Windows 8. Emphasis on
should.
Yeah,
but have you seen the Windows 7 specs? And these haven't really changed for Windows 8. I mean, 1 gig of memory and 1 gigahertz processor. And yeah, that's not going to be a pleasant experience.
Yeah. You might not do anything after that, but it will boot.
We said it would run. You can't even load Notepad or anything once you're up, but hey.
Absolutely.
You know.
It looks really pretty when you get past that little Windows splash screen. But now that you're actually having to hit Start menu, well.
Good luck. Yeah, but the Ars Technica article goes into what you actually want for an interesting experience. And they mention a couple of interesting things, namely with netbooks, you have 1024 by 600 is the default resolution with those, but you actually need to have 1024 by 768 for a good metro experience. So that could
insert
be interesting
sad
visually
trombone
on a netbook.
Right here.
Yeah. But it's the year of the ultrabook, so it doesn't matter, right?
Yes, it's exactly. You need to buy a new piece of equipment is really what that article comes out and says. If you're a computer, and I like the way that this article breaks it down, if you're a computer in 2006, you're going to have some struggle points. If you're a computer from 2008, you've got a much better shot of running Windows 8 comfortably. And I think it's important to note what we were saying earlier. You can load Windows 8, but to use many of the features that are coming, especially with touch or some of the things that are visual in nature, if you have someone in your family and you share a computer and they want to do some of the visual aspects of it, having a newer computer that's DirectX 10 friendly or above and dual core and 2 gigs of RAM and a solid state drive is going to give you a far better experience than just loading it and then waiting for things to draw on the screen. And the article breaks it down pretty good about what you can expect and what hardware you need to shoot for. So if you're thinking about downloading the release preview or you're trying to make a decision on what you're going to do next for your next computer this year, because Microsoft has also announced that you can get upgrades for Windows 8 pretty cheaply if you buy a new computer.
Yeah, it's $14.99, right?
Yeah, so if you buy from June to about January.
Yeah. So how does this work? If you had a machine with Windows 7 that mm-hmm. you bought right now, then you would be able to upgrade through January for this price. Is that about right?
Correct. But you'd have to go through your partners. You have to have the proof that you bought it from an OEM. You would have to, and it explains all this on the Microsoft website. And when you buy your computer, there'll be things there that explain it as well. So it's based off of the when you bought it within the release window, and then you just give Microsoft the proof that you've done so, and then you can buy it for $14.95 and have an updated copy of Windows, because it's in Microsoft's best interest to get a large number of people onto Windows 8. Because it's always that issue of adoption. Nobody wants to go first. Mom used to say, nobody wants to go first, but everybody will kill to be second. So that's kind of where we're at.
That's right. One major thing I wanted to mention that was changed here with the release preview or whatever we're calling it now, all you people who wanted to be able to hack around things so that you could get your classic start menu back and not have to deal with the Metro screen, Microsoft said, and they changed things such that those hacks that were previously effective are not going to work anymore. They're really pushing Metro.
It makes a lot of sense. And that's for the touchscreen interface. Metro isn't just Aero Glass revisited. Metro is what they want to use for touch. They've put a lot of effort into the UI for touch. And they need some conformity there in order to ensure an experience. And we've talked about on the program before about, you know, they've got to compete with the iPad. And to do that, they have to really lay down the rules and say, look, you just can't color outside these lines because it's going to break things. So traditional things that we've done in the past isn't necessarily going to work on a tablet.
Right. And Aero is actually a really good example of this. They want to make the experience the same across tablets and computers, and you're not going to get an Aero experience on a Windows phone, for example. And I don't know about tablets, but you know, it depends on the hardware that you're running as far as whether Aero is even going to happen on this or not. And so Microsoft has basically said, no, we got to make this uniform, so we're not doing Aero, right?
I don't think it's a loss per se. Aero was really good at allowing you to make windows transparent and see things behind other windows or allow some 3D effects and shadowing and one glass to lay on top of another piece of glass. So you could see through that, and that was the whole point of the Aero interface. And on LCD monitors, on desktops, that makes a lot of sense. On a tablet, it really kind of sort of doesn't. The visual effects issue for some people really, really, really doesn't matter because in a lot of cases, it's hard to see a tablet in a bright daylight situation anyway. And really, you just want that text to be as crisp and clear as possible and easy to use. So really, glass doesn't do anything for you in those situations. It makes a lot of sense that they want to flatten out the UI. And the article actually talks a little bit about that, that we have here in the show notes at serotalk.com.
I was viewing Twitter last night and looking for any comments from an accessibility standpoint about any changes in voice narrator, and I haven't really seen anything at all. It seemed like most of the people were playing with other screen readers and making them work to various degrees. I didn't hear any outcry. Nothing did seem to be broken. Don't know if you guys
None of us on the team have had a chance to look at this at the time of the recording. We will soon, hopefully, but at this point, we can't comment beyond, hey, it's there. Go have fun with it if you want to.
And don't put it on a production machine just yet.
No.
Don't let that be your primary OS. Please, please, please. Those of you who are technical enough, you know, probably already are singing this in your sleep. But, you know, this still is not the time in which you say, hey, you know what? I'm done with that Windows 7. I'm going to go Windows 8 24/7. Nope, not yet.
Everything broke, but it's somebody else's fault.
Right, because a lot of companies are still not supporting this release yet because it's not the final release of Windows. So when it is finally released, then you want to check with your app of choice and make sure that they are Windows 8 compatible. And you have to also check and see if your drivers are. Some people kind of jump into Windows without looking to see, oh, my video card is not supported. On my laptop, my ATI video card is still not supported. So I might not be able to run Windows 8 on that laptop. So those are important things to look at before you take the plunge.
Well, of course, we know that Microsoft is really betting on the user being able to use Windows 8 on a tablet and on the PC. And we've talked a lot about hybrids in the last few weeks. And Apple's Tim Cook has some definite opinions about the idea of fusing a PC and a tablet together. He says, not a good idea. People don't want it. Which, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, the argument is a tablet, a dedicated tablet is thin, ultra thin. It's very, very portable. And if you create a hybrid, it's probably not going to be as easy to carry around, not as small.
Yeah, you might be looking at a tablet that docks to something that has a keyboard and a couple more peripheral slots or whatever. But then you get into the, my backpack is weighs 60 pounds, but I have a PC tablet hybrid. Yay for me.
Yeah. And here is my flotilla of accessories that go with this. And everybody is trying to possibly cram too much into the box to get away from sitting in front of the computer. And yeah, there's a lot of Jetsons, space age, this is super cool and stuff like that. But as the bloom comes off the rose with tablets, and we start to find out now what can we do with these devices. I mean, really, it's not been that long ago when Apple released the iPad, and it was totally shunned by the press and media and made fun of. Mm. And then over time, everybody went, whoa, you know, this ain't so bad after all. And they've forgotten that Steve Jobs has said this is a third category of computing, which I do agree with. I don't think you put tablets next to the MacBook Air. You know, there is a reason why you would have a Power Mac or an iMac. There is a reason for having a MacBook Air, and there's a totally different use case for tablets such as the iPad. And I'm always kind of distressed when I see people looking for solutions to problems that probably cannot be solved on this type of computer. And it's very interesting. And I'm glad to see Tim kind of echoing what Steve is saying here.
There is a series of video clips in our next article from this year's D10 conference, and Tim Cook was interviewed. You can either watch some separate clips or you can watch a 17-minute highlight video of some of the things he said. And it's really interesting to listen to him. I've never actually listened to him speak and talk before, but he really is a very interesting man to listen to, I think.
Agreed.
He definitely pours cold water on an iPhone 5 with a 4-inch screen.
Oh,
yeah.
And that's not covered by the warranty either.
No, they do have those fluid sensors are pretty accurate. Yeah, I probably wouldn't do that.
So our next article asks the question, do these blueprints show the iPhone 5 with, you know, all kinds of cool things, a 4-inch screen and all kinds of stuff? I like this article because it actually points out how easily some of this stuff can be faked.
Yeah, you could mock up these blueprints in a couple of hours, apparently. And the blueprints in this particular article apparently don't come from very credible sources, but it's yet more grist for the Apple rumor mill. You know, here, look at these pretty pictures that Apple may or may not have created themselves. And it has all of these things like the smaller dock connector. They changed where the earphone jack goes and the 4-inch screen, which Tim Cook pretty much said no. And I guess we should talk about the reasons why he may have said no to a 4-inch screen. Apple is trying to get developers to be able to design and have a similar user experience across all devices. And if they made the screen size bigger, now what are developers going to do? Are they going to have to write for the 4-inch screen and then it looks really stupid on previous generation devices? Or you know, how does that work?
We saw what happened with Android, and we don't want to do that. Because as an Android developer, that's exactly what you run into. What is my basic native resolution? Is it for, you know, 7-inch screens, 10-inch screens, 5.2-inch screens, 4.7-inch screens? No, that makes a lot of sense, actually, what he's saying there. And to keep that kind of sort of all together in one place. You know, Jamie, last week on 110, and thanks to Buddy for pitching in last week, great comments from Mr. Brannon. You had talked about security at Apple, and I was listening to the podcast, and I was actually replying like I was in the podcast. That's how weird this is. And you guys weren't answering me. I felt very alone. But when you were talking about all the security and were there security guards, I kept thinking, yeah, but not in the San Francisco bar where people leave their prototype iPhones. So that's what I think we're going to have to wait for, is some Apple person to come out with the Apple, you know, iPhone 5 and go to a bar in San Francisco and some lucky reporter falling upon it.
Sounds good. Can't wait for that to happen. More to talk about right here on this very podcast. Something else we can talk about Apple-related, they're selling the Nest Learning Thermostat. It's got a $250 price tag. That's a little high, but, you know, I'm wondering if this thing might actually be accessible because it, first of all, it learns your temperature preferences, and it will turn itself off when you're not home, that sort of thing. But it works with the iOS and Mac.
At least as of about 4 months ago, it was not accessible. Okay. Mike Calvo approached the Nest team, and they indicated that they were working with the AFB to make this more accessible. So they do appear to be amenable to making this thing usable, but that hasn't happened yet, to my knowledge. And I would love to have one of these things, because right now my thermostat is one of these really old units that has kind of a slider switch, and so the control is very coarse, and I may have moved the thing 4 degrees even though I just moved it a little bit, and there's really no way to tell. This thing will learn your patterns. It'll know you're gone all day, so it won't have to heat up the house or cool down the house, but it knows that you're arriving home at 6 p.m., so maybe at 5 it'll start ramping up to get this to the temperature that you prefer. And maybe at night you want things a little warmer, so you can train it to do that. It's very, very neat, and I look forward to it being usable by us.
Definitely. Well, if you want to own an iPhone, but maybe you don't want a 2-year contract lock-in or the $30 data plan, you might think about Cricket in the U.S. You can don't have to buy a contract. You do get unlimited text, data, and calls for $55 a month, but the iPhone's going to set you back a little more. For an 8-gigabyte iPhone 4, it's $400. A 16-gigabyte iPhone 4S is $500. So a little bit more money up front. It is a CDMA phone as
Not
well.
Not completely unsubsidized, but getting there.
It's getting close.
It is indeed. And with the CDMA network, this is why they couldn't offer something like the 3GS, which would have been way cheaper. But CDMA versions of those didn't exist, and we don't see Apple creating them just for Cricket. Mm. It's interesting, though. I think, what is it, T-Mobile is the only U.S. carrier now that doesn't have the iPhone?
Yeah. Ouch. Ouch, ouch. I was a T-Mobile customer for a while, so that would have been painful. I wouldn't have been long, I don't think, if it had been that choice had to be made. So this unlimited data, by the way, you get throttled after 2.3 gigabytes, but they say that many people don't reach that. So
sure, it's that definition of unlimited that means something other than what the word actually means.
And by unlimited, we mean non-existent.
Exactly. Yeah. And oh, by the way, Verizon customers, don't worry about that because we've changed the name of what grandfathered means to.
Yes.
Grandfathered means nobody gets this.
Exactly. We decided the way to make it fair was to make sure that nobody gets it.
Carriers are evil. That's all I have to say about that.
Agreed. Well, you know, it was really nice being off for a week and not talking about Facebook. I was really, really happy not to consider Facebook, not to involve the letters I, P, and O, not to think about hoodies. And then, Jamie, what's this? There's going to be a iTunes competitor via Facebook. Isn't making a phone bad enough? Now they want to get into my music?
Apparently, the biggest problem Facebook has is it's really not making any money much.
Ooh,
or
shock.
At least not as much
really?
As it should. Yeah. So, like, their super high stock has kind of fallen. I guess when people really realized, hey, this isn't really making us any money.
It's making General Motors look smart for pulling out the $10 million right before the IPO. That was actually a cool idea.
Yeah. Well, they wanted a full-page ad.
And when 50% of your viewers are mobile and then you're not serving up mobile ads, so let me get this straight. Half of your readership that I want to sell ads to doesn't have the ability to see the ads you want me to buy.
Mm-hmm. Huh. I was laughing because I was looking at comments, not on this article. It was a different one that we're actually going to talk about in a bit from Molly Wood.
Yes.
And they were commenting on Facebook's lack of mobile ads and all of that stuff. And they pointed out in the comments something that I've been thinking about for a while. With Internet Explorer, it's not so easy to block ads. But with most other browsers, Firefox has extensions for ad blocking, and Chrome does too. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people will take advantage of that. And there's really no way that Facebook or anybody else can work around that. And I think that as users become more educated, more and more people are going to be able to just block these ads.
Mm-hmm. And IE10 has do not track on by default. And that's going to be very interesting because Microsoft owns kind of a 5% stake in Facebook. You know, for them, they kind of also want to still track for Bing because they, you know, Bing is their ad search and they make money off of that. But they're, you know, because of pressure and because of what happened with Safari and Apple, it's very interesting that they're going to jump out on IE10 and say, hey, by default, you need to opt in, which is a great trend. I'd rather be asked than just have something flipped
I'm
on.
I'm just surprised that they're doing it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Facebook's biggest problem is they won't leave well enough alone. Right. And that was said, too, during some of these conversations about the IPO was they keep playing with things. They never leave anything static. They're always changing.
And usually they break something when they're playing around with all of this stuff. We've become accustomed, and it's not just blind people. We've become accustomed to Facebook changing the interface and everybody hates it, or something breaks on mobile and everybody hates it. And then they've got to come back and do something different. The one thing that surprised me in this article was I thought like the Farmville and Pet Town or whatever you want to call all of this stuff, the revenue generated from all that stuff where you buy the tokens or points or whatever was actually not as big a part of Facebook's revenue as I thought it was. What was it, only 2%?
Yeah. Hmm. Well, and also Zynga went and did Zynga.com. And a couple of others are starting to, they'll use Facebook Connect, so you can still annoy everybody with, hey, want to come farm with me on Farmville? Mm-hmm. But they can actually control the experience and do the payment options through Zynga.com and not have to use Facebook, you know, funny dollars or tokens or whatever they call it. That means you're losing more and more because they're going to Zynga as a direct portal as opposed to having to go through Facebook to get to Zynga. And then they take a cut of that, like an app store.
Yeah, and speaking of App Store, Facebook actually now has an App Center, and I'm not entirely sure how this works because it was done just before the IPO. Apparently, you could get apps for Android or iOS devices and that kind of thing through Facebook, and Facebook gets a little bit of a cut of this, but I hadn't even heard about this until just recently, and I haven't seen it at all, so I don't know if anybody cares that Facebook has an App Center. Are people really going to do that now instead of just doing what's comfortable and going to the Apple Store and all that?
You're going to buy your antivirus through the Security Center, as seen with a couple of weeks ago when we had an article where it talked about being able to get your antivirus, and it was all paid stuff. There were no free antiviruses on that scene. You know, and this week, actually, I've been inundated with, because I follow a lot of video game feeds, I've been inundated with You Don't Know Jack has come to Facebook, and of course, Jetpack Joyride, which I reviewed for High Contrast, is now on Facebook. And it's just like they are trying to do what Apple is doing too, by the way. They're not alone. But, you know, Apple is trying to become the new Nintendo with all these third-party apps and Game Center and all of that, because casual games do rule the roost on a lot of these social platforms. Angry Birds, perfect example.
Yeah. My wife finally played Angry Birds the other day for the first time, and I actually heard the music and the sounds. They are actually, this was Angry Birds Space, which I think is the top-selling app at the moment. It's like, really?
On many, many platforms. Yeah, Angry Bird Space took off, and it's on so many platforms, and it's very ubiquitous, so much so that, like Ronald McDonald, you know, people recognize the cast of Angry Birds or the pigs just automatically. Mm-hmm. It's just really taken the world by storm.
That is so funny. Well, Molly Wood asks the question in a Molly rant. Well, actually, she doesn't ask the question. She just says, if Facebook dies, and it might, its killer will be born mobile. That's a phrase I really haven't heard before, I guess. Maybe.
No, I haven't either. Okay. But I think what she's saying is that Facebook, like many other platforms, didn't design for mobile from the ground up. And now they're this far into the game, mm-hmm. and they have to consider mobile, but it's going to be difficult because they're so far down this road of not really thinking of mobile as being as important as it truly is. And so the idea is, you know, if Facebook does die, it's going to be because somebody else does take that strategy and say mobile is the way to go. That's the trend. It's becoming more and more viable. And so whatever we design, we have to consider mobile as its basis, and maybe even PC access is sort of an afterthought.
That's the whole idea behind the Instagram purchase. For the same reason that Microsoft bought our audio producer's favorite word, Skype, for the ability to take that program off the table from a Google Plus or something like that, Facebook bought Instagram to take it off the table for competitors, then 2 weeks later released a Facebook camera app, which, you know, you go, okay, why did you do that then? Well, you know, they had to take a really big strategic piece that a competitor could come up with or also purchase and then go after Facebook with. So at this point, now you're on the defensive. And I don't know. I agree with what Molly's saying. But the other factor is that the way the web works and the way that mobile works especially, what's hot today is not hot tomorrow. 2 years ago, RIM was top dog.
Yep.
And, you know, you can change mobile fleets out in a corporation a lot faster than you can change PCs and notebooks and things like that. So therefore, in the land of mobile, 18 months is your window. And you got to make it hang on there and do the best you can. Angry Birds existed for 3 years before, you know, Space came out and you know, those kinds of things. What keeps people in there? There's a whole landfill of AOL CDs in New Mexico. That, you know, there was a time where AOL merged with Time Warner. Everybody thought that that was the end of free media. Big Brother had arrived. That didn't happen.
No.
You know, and you know, Tom from MySpace is still looking for a job. And if anybody's going to kill Facebook, it's probably Tom. Tom's got a lot of free time on his hands. So, but, you know, Friendster, as much as people don't like Google Plus, Orkut, which is also kind of Google-oriented, is huge in South America. These things do have a tendency to have a lifespan, and what you do in that time, should be towards your next move, because that brand, you know, it isn't like Coke or Pepsi. People do change.
I didn't realize just how low a rating the Facebook app has in the App Store. 2-star. So ouch. Apparently it isn't just blind people that hate it.
It is reviled by everyone.
It's clunky. It's really, really clunky. MacBreak Weekly, they actually talked about that about 2 episodes ago from the time of our recording, and that it really, truly needs an update. That has something to do with it, too. You're giving people, you know, look at Twitter. The Twitter clients give people features and focus that they want without having to go to Twitter. And that's the kind of what people want with Facebook. They would rather still have the benefits of Facebook, but they don't want to use Facebook.
Yeah. Well, coming up after the break, cyber wars and driverless cars right here on the Serotalk podcast. Looking for a cross-platform solution to quickly convert printed materials and PDFs into text, MP3, or DAISY formats? Check out Serotech's DocuScan Plus. For just $299, use DocuScan Plus on your Windows or Mac computer. Store documents in the cloud for easy retrieval and access them from anywhere. For more information, visit www.docuscanplus.com.
And we're back on Serotalk Podcast 111. And let's talk a little bit about cyber war and Israel in particular. They're saying, hey, don't blame this flame cyber attack on us. We didn't do it. A lot of speculation has been going on about this particular cyber attack. It's basically a worm that is meant to infiltrate Iran and perhaps a couple of other places. No country has actually taken credit for this, but there were a lot of speculations that it was Israel and even the U.S. responsible. And the reason that people kind of felt that way was because the Stuxnet virus was done by the U.S. and Israel. And of course, the problem is that this particular virus, they meant for it to only attack a particular network or, you know, group of machines in a particular country. But they didn't really think about thumb drives or the fact that it's pretty easy to get material from one place to another. So with Stuxnet, they don't control it anymore. It's out in the wild now. That wasn't the intention, but that is what happened. And we have this flame worm, and it appears the same thing has happened with it, but nobody quite knows who's responsible for creating that one.
I guess they never got the Melissa virus or the I Love You virus or any of those.
Well, those were floppy disks. We don't use floppy disks. We use thumb drives.
No, history
drives.
Never
that's
repeats
entirely
itself,
different.
And information wants to be free. I mean, that's the hacker ethos, but yeah, okay. I guess let's send some Bruce Sterling books and some William Gibson books to these individuals so they can learn about how computers actually work. It's not a series of tubes
read
and
Neuromancer
pipes.
And now replan your strategy.
Mm-hmm. And you know there are guys in the trenches that are saying, I told the boss this wasn't a great idea. Said this was going to happen.
Yeah, but they're all using, you know, the bosses are using Facebook, so it's all good.
Right. Well, let's talk about something a little more upbeat, like maybe driverless cars, that some people are a little concerned about how much data they're going to collect. Imagine that, privacy concerns where Google's concerned. Really?
That driverless car saw me pull into the Taco Bell drive-thru, and it knows I ordered 2 bean burritos.
That's
this will
right.
not stand.
GPS. These are the irony is probably these are people who actually use turn-by-turn navigation every day.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't want these cars tracking me. So
no,
hand
Garmin,
me over your
where
TomTom.
Where do I go next?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That ship has sailed, folks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting the things that people get upset about in terms of privacy and the things that people for whatever reason don't care about, and they're basically gaping holes where everyone knows everything about you. So yeah, this particular group, they want the the driverless cars off the road completely until Google agrees or something like that not to collect any of this data, which is probably not going to happen.
Yeah, okay. No. And I don't want Siri, you know, taking down all my private information and giving it to Apple. Okay, don't use Siri.
This reminds me so much of a college friend I had, and he was the most paranoid person about viruses ever. And this was all he ever thought about was viruses and who would know his private information. And throughout the 4 years that I knew him, none of the rest of us got viruses or anything like that. But he, the uber paranoid guy, was the one to contract several of them.
Oh, no.
And so I feel like it's like that where, yes, we need to think about privacy, but I don't feel like a lot of people are doing that intelligently. They're very paranoid about the things that may not be quite so important, but again, gaping holes that everybody knows everything about you.
Then you don't have to use the technology. Don't turn it off. Don't use it. Allow the rest of us to go right ahead. But, you know, you don't have to be a part of that. That's not a problem. But, you know, getting mad at others who want to use it, who could benefit from it, seems kind of crazy. Basically, what it is these guys were all Dukes of Hazzard fans and didn't enjoy Knight Rider because, look, since Knight Rider, I want that car. So,
oh, definitely.
You know, I don't need the General Lee. I'll just keep my Knight Industries 2000. Thank you. Yeah, that's fine with me. Kit, I need you, buddy.
Yeah. I was surprised how many miles have been logged on the roads already by driverless cars. It's a bunch. I don't want to quote the number off the top of my head because I didn't write them in my notes, but they are in the article. So go check that out. Nevada and California, right, are the two states right now that have...
so far.
Yeah. So they're kind of out there a little bit. That's pretty interesting. Okay, let's talk about another downer story here. This one may be close to the last time we talk about this. I don't know. The numbers behind RIM's impending collapse.
For a dead company, we sure talk about them a lot, don't we?
Yeah, we really do. I mean, they actually froze their shares on NASDAQ because to avoid the inevitable, I guess.
Yeah, they're basically, I think, trying to survive until BlackBerry 10, which they're counting on to kind of, you know, raise them from the abyss and make them a viable company again. I don't know that that's going to happen. I'm pretty sure it won't. But RIM is not profitable at all right now. I think they're like 3 or 4% in the red, and that's continuing to grow. So RIM is going to need to lay off a lot of people and become even leaner and meaner if they're going to survive until BlackBerry 10 is released. They're looking at, say, what, 6,000 layoffs, which is about a third of the company.
Mm-hmm.
That's tough. Wow.
And it's coming from data division, right? That's what they're looking at cutting. So they're concentrating just on BlackBerry 10 and everything else. Bye-bye.
Yeah. And they still have 78 million customers that are going to be affected if they go away.
Yeah, losing the data infrastructure would be really, really bad, but it looks like that's where they're wanting to make the cuts. Again, just so they can survive long enough for BlackBerry 10 to come out and flop.
Yeah, this is Palm all over again. This is the Trio. Yeah. This is the handspring. We've seen this story before, and it never ends well, and they either need a white knight or they become like the WebOS division of HP, where they get one or two saving graces, and then eventually, you know, it still ends
up happening.
It's just
gone. Yeah. I think we said the final goodbye to WebOS about 2 or 3 weeks ago, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's another one of those where it's a great idea, but, you know, they had a longer run than the kin, so there you go.
There is that. Well, that was like 71 days.
Very
not hard to beat
so.
That.
Here's a great phone. No, forget it.
What we really meant was look at that interesting thing over there.
Exactly.
If this ever
is
happened.
Is that a double rainbow? Oh, look, here's our new phone. There you go.
Let's move on into AT, shall we? The results of the fourth WebAIM screen reader survey are out, And there are some interesting things here, I think. First of all, not surprisingly, mobile use is definitely up.
Hooray!
Yeah, probably, again, not as surprising, a few more iOS users than Android at the moment. I'm sure that will continue to change.
What's interesting about that is that the iPhone and Android usage do not at all parallel what's going on in the mainstream. Uh-huh. In the mainstream, it looks like a fairly close race. And here, the difference is tremendous. And they, you know, they speculate, well, people either are angry about the lack of Android accessibility, or maybe there is just a perception that Android accessibility in its current state, you know, the platform is not worth looking at. So most people are choosing iOS.
But the other part of that was that people that do not rely on a screen reader, 24% of them, almost a fourth of them, do use Android. And
yeah,
I think this is important because we just came off the back of a story that says that RIM isn't cool anymore. And regardless of accessibility, let's take this off the table. iOS, wonderful, awesome, access, got it. Things change. We just talked about Facebook changing. I know it's hard for people to grasp, and I know I'm sounding like a doom and gloomsayer, but it is possible to have a major shift in the market and the iPhone become the uncool cap for whatever reason and not be the thing people want to use anymore. And Samsung is selling more phones than the iPhone. And it's very important for us to understand as mainstream watchers, not just because of accessibility, that if there's a trend towards Android, you know, in the sighted world, then there's a need for us to learn more about it or push for accessibility or advocate for more access with Google or fix the fragmentation issue or what have you. Because, again, I'm not saying throw away your Apple devices. That's not where I'm going. I'm just saying that trends do change, and there is a possibility to have backlashes on the craziest of things, and people move away from something. And then we get into stereotypes. You know, here's your 10 pencils, here's your 10 cup, here's your pencils, here's your iPhone, right? Mm-hmm. We don't want to be in a situation where we don't have access to any devices. So, I again, that's my thing.
Yeah, and that's why I care about Android. Even though there's nothing compelling for me right now to use the platform, I still want access to it because at some point Android may release an OS that does make your coffee for you and does a whole lot of other things that iOS does not. And I don't want to be in the position where when that happens, we're starting from scratch saying, oh, we need access, and it might be a couple of years later before we actually get it.
Exactly. The trend switches, and then we're so far behind the hole we're not able to jump in.
Yeah. Right. And let's not forget Windows 8 phones. We may very well be seeing accessibility.
I'm
almost certain that we will because of Narrator. That platform is going to be the same across all devices. So, yes, I expect that Windows 8 phone is going to become a part of this conversation too.
And the numbers are really interesting here because as much as people that are in tech circles love the Mac, these numbers don't necessarily indicate that Mac adoption has risen enough to challenge Windows usage. And those who are using Windows are looking at viable alternatives such as NVDA or the wonderful system Access available from sa2go.com as, you know, things that they can use. Because it's not a one screen reader universe any longer.
No,
it's not. No, I really like looking at the differences in results from 2010 until now. And there were a few before 2010. I think this goes back to 2008, actually. And initially, the response was that free or low-cost screen readers really can't be taken seriously. They're not viable alternatives. They're the thing that you use if you have no other choice at all. But that trend has changed dramatically. And there are still a group of people who don't use free or low-cost screen readers, and they don't feel that they're viable alternatives. But that group is shrinking a lot as the years go by.
And there was even a stat here that part of the reason for that was because they've become familiar with a set of keystrokes or a behavior of a screen reader, and that's right. why they stay there.
Yeah, one of the criteria for why do you use your current screen reader, comfort, was a big one for some people.
And it makes a lot of sense. We talk about change and updates and, you know, things moving at lightning speeds. It's you want to be able to have a tool that you can rely on, that you feel comfortable with, and you know, feels like a warm pair of shoes, especially if you got to walk around all day. It's a wonderful, wonderful article. I really encourage everybody to go and look at this in the show notes and you know, thank WebAIM for all the wonderful work. And also, for those of you who are fans of NVDA, this is a perfect reason for why you should donate to the cause and help those guys out, because this proves, without a shadow of a doubt, that those guys are doing a tremendous job, and they really should be recognized for that.
They just released their third podcast. You can find that right on iBlink Radio, among other places. Don't usually do audio boos in the podcast show notes, but I've got a couple this week. I thought they were quite good. The first was actually tweeted by Hims. Jim Denham talks a little bit about his first impressions with regard to the Braille Edge Braille display. This is a 40-cell Braille display. I forget if they have a smaller one. I think they do as well. But I know they have the 40-cell that has some limited note-taking capabilities.
Right. It's the note-takerette.
Yes, a note-takerette. Exactly. And there's not a lot you can say in a 5-minute boo, and especially when you're talking about a Braille display and an audio post. But I thought he did a good job of describing the layout of the Braille display and talking. He seems to be quite pleased with it. At the moment, the HIMS products do not work with iOS, but I'm certain, feel quite confident that when we see the next update of iOS, that will change.
Right. And so if you haven't looked at Joe Orozco's article that we mentioned last week about this very thing, he is advocating for this access to come back quickly, and he encourages people to contact Apple Accessibility and let them know, hey, this is really a big deal. We'd really like to have that functionality back. So you should be seeing that working with iOS devices again soon. The Braille Edge is supported by System Access as well as JAWS, Window Eyes, and NVDA, I believe.
There are a lot of lively discussions that pop up over on Apple Viz, and I'm always impressed with the initial posts and actually pretty impressed with the comments of users over there. People manage to keep things pretty civil and pretty well thought out, so I really encourage you to go over and check out the site. This particular thread of discussion that's still being updated, I believe, is the topic of using an iPhone with a Braille display as a note taker. Someone asked the question, hey, should I go ahead and purchase another legacy note taker or a specialized device, or should I just cut the cord and use a Braille display with my iPhone? And there were some really good discussions. There wasn't so much of this passionate, I hate note takers and they should all die. And there wasn't that. There was this more thoughtful comments like, you know, really right now on the iPhone, if you need to move through large documents and go by paragraph, that's a little bit unwieldy and a little bit tough. So kind of think about what you need to do and kind of base your decision on that. So
if you're going to use your iPhone for everything, start looking at external batteries.
Yeah.
Well, you know, yeah, there is that.
I want this to be my replacement for Bard. I want this to be my everything. And that's great. But, you know, golly, you're eating a lot of battery. And that's why I still have a BookSense. You know, I don't want to use my phone for everything.
I liked that this discussion was very balanced. There were some people who said, take a look at the Braille Edge and similar products because they have limited note-taking functionality and you can use them with your iPhone as well. There was a comment from a person who is deafblind, and she exclusively uses an iPhone with a Braille display to do everything, and she does it very successfully. So I think that it is one of those things that it depends on what your needs are, and I was just glad to see that the community did reflect that in its comments rather than tearing people down for wanting something older or saying, you know, the iPhone is the answer to every prayer and that kind of thing. It really was thoughtfully done.
Main Menu did about a 6-part series recently on taking some tasks and looking at the various note-taker options, specialized note-taker options that are out there, and actually how did they perform these various tasks. So if you're interested, go to the main menu page, and I'll probably just link to the main site. And you can probably just do a search for Note Taker and find those shows. I really encourage you to give those a listen. There's some good work over there.
And things like Excel and stuff. If you don't have to do heavy word processing, if you're not having to do a lot of formatting, if all you're doing is really just taking notes for yourself personally, you know, you've got a lot of options there. But when you're having to do something that's more work-related or more office general and task, you know, that may be where things start to fall apart. The awesome thing is like Jamie was just saying, there's a lot of great resources out there. And why I say that the iPhone is great is because it's Windows 95 all over again. We're all learning from each other. Somebody always has a resource. And, you know, you can find out more about this by going to AppleVis or, you know, iBlink Radio. Go through any number of our podcasts there. There's a lot of people who talk about the iPhone and what they use. Again, just apply it to your own personal filters.
We have a JAWS 13.0.924 update. I have not taken a look at this. I'm not sure exactly what's in it, but it's always a good idea to keep your screen reader up to date. So go ahead and download that if you're a JAWS user.
And update those help files. Some people never update the JAWS help files. You really should update the JAWS help files. They spend a lot of great time updating those things, and they do help you in a pinch. I'm telling you, those are well worth it.
JSA also has... been released. This is version 10. And this is, if you're not familiar with JSA, these are scripts developed for use with JAWS in conjunction with Dragon Naturally Speaking.
And of course, if you're aware of any of the work that Brian Hartgen does, you know that he is a wizard when it comes to script writing for JAWS. That guy can do some pretty amazing stuff. So I'm sure they are quite well done. If you're a BrailleSense user, version 7.0 is out. I'm not a BrailleSense user, so some of the features kind of escaped me a little bit, but the one thing that did catch my attention was a Google Maps app of some sort. I'm going to be curious as to how that works.
Perhaps we'll be talking about that when we do coverage of the NFB and ACB conventions in about a month.
Wow. That's that far away. Golly. And you can help us cover the event by giving us iReports. We want you to be able to be a part of our coverage and provide what you see on the show floor, what you're seeing in the division meetings. What's it like at Denny's down the street from the Anatole in Dallas or a great barbecue place there in Louisville? We want to know. So if you leave us an iReport, we're actually going to incorporate those into our coverage. So feel free to jump into iBlink Radio for Android or iOS and leave us your thoughts while you're visiting the conventions this year.
I told you that I had a couple of audio boos in this week's show. Any of you who are familiar with Kevin Reeves know that he really enjoys audio boos, and there are times really he has a topic that he wants to talk about and he'll hop on and do an audio boo. This one particularly is about 4 or 5 boos. He had to take some time to get this done. But it's a really interesting subject because he talks about blue-collar jobs for blind people. And he mentions when he moved to Nashville, he was broke. He didn't have any work, and he would have loved to work at Starbucks. He would have flipped burgers at McDonald's. He went to Voc Rehab and said, help me with this. Help me to get just a little bit of training, some non-visual techniques for doing this, and they had no clue how to help him. They were not in the slightest equipped to assist him with that. He talks about the fact that it's okay to work at Starbucks. It's okay to work at McDonald's. We just got to figure out how.
Exactly. This is something that I've thought about before, and his experience is sadly not unique because what you're looking at when you walk into Voc Rehab, you have sort of two categories. And I'm definitely generalizing here. I'm not saying this happens all the time everywhere with every agency. But generally, what you're looking at is either a sheltered workshop or you have a degree in something. And so you're looking to be placed in some sort of agency that has something to do with your degree. There isn't really any in between. And if you think about this, blind college students, Depending on what you do, you might be able to get a paid internship in the computer lab over the summer or something like that. But what if technology is not your thing? What if you are, again, just looking for something to give you a little pocket change or something that you can live on while you pursue your real dream of perhaps being a musician, as Kevin is doing, or what have you? There aren't nearly as many options to do that. You can't go in and say, I'd like to drive and deliver pizza for Domino's.
Right.
Whereas any other college student could totally do that.
And those are usually the entry-level jobs that are most in demand. Speaking as someone who was in vocational rehabilitation for 10 years as a government employee, there are several things that can give you a leg up in VR. One is being able to really know your base core skills of reading and writing, reading Braille, using a word processor, knowing Excel, knowing email, because those jobs are a little bit more easier to come by depending on your state and depending on where you live. Certainly there are more opportunities to get into a call center or do those kinds of things for that kind of stuff. But when you're looking at a position in, let's say, McDonald's, where it's very iconic, there's pictures everywhere. They're pushing pictures of food to give you your food. And there are numbers that come up. Like it tells you, you know, it tells the guy behind the counter what change to give you. So there's very little thought involved. And you think that those would be really easy to, you know, let's take it from the low vision environment. You think, okay, well, we can make that really easy to modified to be able to see. Well, there's a reflective surface on the counter that causes, you know, light to come down or something like that. And so it's really kind of tricky. But to help yourself out, knowing your core skills can help you so much when you go in to talk to that counselor for the first time.
I think that's true, but I think that his concern is still valid. Even cleaning floors is not something that they would have a blind person doing, or cleaning counters, you know, for whatever reason. And while I do think it's essential to have your core reading and writing skills and be at least basically proficient in technology, what happens when you have classes or you have something else going on from 8 to 5, and so you really need a job that's 7 to 10 or what have you? You can't go and be a receptionist in an 8 to 5 office job. And so it's still one of those things that we have to think about and be creative about, as far as what are some other blue collar jobs that blind people can or should be doing.
Retail stocking. Nighttime, if it's not a 24-hour grocery store, there have been successful individuals because they can memorize the planograms and stock things and not have to worry about getting in the way of customers, you know, as they're shopping. There are opportunities like that. But again, it depends on geographic region. Transportation is your biggest issue, because sometimes you can find that position, but what metro/, you know, you're going to have to rely on family member to get you back and forth. That's mm-hmm. the other side of this too. I wish there was a magic bullet. Golly, I really do. But sometimes it really does come down to the individual. And training and stuff like that, Hadley has some great, you know, skills for and training classes for you to do self-learning and teaching on certain types of skills, and definitely check out Hadley. And also asking to talk to the low vision or vision teacher or VRT, vocational rehabilitational teacher, because they can help you with organizational techniques, because then that will give you the tools to be able to explain to the employer, well, actually, I have a series of rubber bands that I use to be able to do that. I actually do that at home when I go to file things, when I go to stock things, when I go to do things like that.
So if you're listening and you have actually done this, you've accomplished this goal, you've gone to work somewhere like this, send us an iReport or send us an email to resources@sarahtalk.com. Go over to the show notes page, sarahtalk.com, and leave a blog comment. Or call 866-997-2522 and tell us how you did it. You know, kind of in a few words, give us some tips as to how you got your foot in the door in that job that you got. We'd love to hear from you.
And if you like Kevin Reeves, you want to listen to EOL, the end of line show. Kevin has been our third chair for our April Fool's episode, as well as a regular episode. And Kevin is a hoot on that show, and highly recommend you give it a shot on iBlink Radio or head on over to www.eolshow.com.
And KevinReeves.net is where you can find some of his music. He is a phenomenal musician as well.
Indeed.
Coming up after the break, your iReports, and we're going to talk about a legendary guitarist who passed away recently, right here on the Serotalk Podcast Network.
Over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn, so follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, no, it's not food. It's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at pornlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
We're back once again on Serotalk 111. And now it's time for the mailbag. Hopefully no one will get injured this week. Stand back. Stand back. All right, there we go. I think we're all okay. We have an iReport this week from Ernie, and we were talking about Spoken Layer last week. Apparently, this is available in the App Store, and here is Ernie with a couple of thoughts on how this works.
Hello, Serotalk Podcast team. My name is Ernie from Detroit, Michigan. I would like to comment on Serotalk Podcast 110 regarding Spoken Layer. It seems to be in the App Store. I have downloaded the app, and it's a free app, by the way, and you don't need an account or anything to use it. What I really like about this app is it can read the news by humans, and then like the recently added stories that are posted right up on there are on read by the Ivona voice. It's a British Ivona voice, by the way. And it has some sources, such as the Associated Press and Gadget and TechCrunch, and then a few others that are not on the top of my head at this moment. But I also like to say that I really like your guys' podcast a lot, and keep up the great work. Bye-bye for now.
This does sound very cool. I think I'd like to check it out myself. I didn't realize that the TTS engine was Ivona, and I do like that British voice quite a lot. And I'm really interested to hear the human narrators on these stories.
There's so many apps, I can't get to them all. Blindside, Blind Square, Fruit Machine. Jeez, wow, this is awesome.
Speaking of Blindside, I was supposed to mention that. I promised last week I'd say a little something about it. I won't spend long. One of the things I discovered, kind of with the help of Macy McLean on Twitter, so thank you, Macy, you got to turn voiceover off when you play the game. Silly me, I struggled just trying to figure out why it wouldn't work, and that's just because you got, but it doesn't state that or anything. So I guess you got to spell things out for people like me. So anyway, turn voiceover off. You know, it's kind of funny. I guess I was spoiled by Papa Sangre, because of the professional voice acting. And the voice acting in this game is, it's okay, but it's not BBC. Let's just put it that way.
Look out. There is something behind you.
Yes.
Be careful.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Stop that.
Yeah, that's about right. You guys got it.
Can't all be Grizzly Gulch.
Yeah.
That's right. Too bad we don't have Buddy here to do
Buddy does
the,
excellent flashback to Grizzly Gulch. We'll have to get him on the podcast to do that. He does a great invitation.
He does.
Although we will have to do it in a situation where he won't blow up microphones or hurt Patrick's ears.
Yeah, he'll have to stand about 7 feet back from his mic and do it.
He puts a lot of emotion into that yell. It's pretty good.
There is a point at which you're supposed to cross a street, and I and others do not seem to be able to successfully cross said street without dying. So I've died a lot in the last few hours, but perhaps by the time we record Triple Click Home, the next episode, maybe either Alina or I or someone will have mastered that particular level.
Can you jump up on the hood of a car?
Darn it.
I just need a quick little ride.
Or give us an MP3, like a walkthrough, because sometimes on YouTube, I'll go there to see, like, if I'm playing Sonic the Hedgehog or something like that, and it's like, oh, gosh, how do I get past that part? YouTube is, like, awesome for that, because I could just go in and watch and see how somebody else played it and go, oh, dude, that saved me so much time, and I had no idea I couldn't see that because it was so, so small or something like that. So, if somebody does an audio walkthrough or something, let us know. That'd be great. Stick it up on YouTube or let us know on Sarotalk at twitter.com/Sarotalk.
I get frustrated with text adventure games, and I'll take a peek at the walkthrough, and that's usually my downfall, because I don't care how careful you are, you always get a spoiler.
Yep.
And then it's just
it doesn't help
me
with
there.
The Destino games, though. Back all you want, I don't know if I can ever get to Mars. I just don't know if I'm ever going to get there.
It has been so long since I played that game. Wow. Yeah.
Did you stop on the asteroid? Did you find the gold nugget?
I back in the DOS day, I did. I haven't played the is it for Windows now or for iOS?
No, the iOS
both?
One. Yeah,
okay,
the
okay.
iOS.
Yeah,
which is
something for
available
Windows,
for free on the App Store. It's awesome.
Yeah,
there's several games.
That's right. We did an interview about that back in December with Michael Barnes.
You can actually hear that. That was actually one of our Christmas specials. So if you're looking to hear how those games made it to the iPhone, head on over to our archives on Sarotalk.com and go to December 2011.
We also had some other specials recently, and quite a few folks actually rather enjoyed these. We talked about the Bradley Smoker. We did a Smokin' with Sarah Spectives, and then we had a standalone where Mike Calvo did a written and spoken review of the Bradley Smoker, and we've gotten tremendous feedback on that. So thank you all for listening, and we hope you enjoy smoking as well when you purchase your Bradley Smoker.
Indeed. Again, resources at sarotalk.com for those emails, iReports either on iOS or your Android device, or call 866-997-2522. Finally, you can leave a blog comment. Be sure to go over to iTunes as well and rate our podcast, please. We would really appreciate that.
And tell a friend. You know, we don't just talk tech here. We talk about smelly books and food and all sorts of
games.
Pink Floyd, The Wall. It's all great. No, come on. Let others know about the podcast, and we appreciate that.
It's time now for Roundabout. For this week, Roundabout. Guitarist Doc Watson, who is a blind guitarist, died at age 89. You know, I could listen to what's called flat top picking, good acoustic guitar picking in the bluegrass genre all night long. I just absolutely am fascinated and love to listen to that style of music. And he was one of the best. He was smooth. He had a real smooth singing voice, very comfortable style of performance, and would tell stories about songs a little bit as well. This is actually a 3-page article on his life. It's actually rather extensive. And it kind of sheds a little light on being a blind man back in the 30s and the 40s when they didn't have the conveniences that we have today, and how he managed to be successful and overcome all of the odds that I'm sure were there.
I love when he talks about how his dad basically handed him a big saw. And, you know, everybody's got to work around here, and there's no reason why you can't do this as well. And he did.
Ronnie Millsap talks about the same thing. He did the same thing. He grew up in the mountains, and he pulled his weight. He did his share of the work as much as possible.
Apparently, this guy was an overhand style. Is that what I understood? Is that he played?
I don't know that he was. That was not mentioned. The one thing that really stood out for me that was mentioned was how he had the ability to take parts that would normally be played on a fiddle, which is quite a different instrument, and he could successfully play these with really fast, intricate melodies on the guitar.
Wow. Bluegrass has actually lost a couple of icons already, wasn't it? Scruggs recently. Yeah. It was Earl Scruggs.
Yeah. And, I believe that's right.
Yeah, so the music genre of bluegrass has had a couple of heavy hitters, unfortunately, pass on. And you know, that's happened actually music world in general between Adam Yauch of the Beastie Boys and some others. We've had a lot of music, Donna Summer, just recently.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of big-name music stars, unfortunately, leave us this year.
Well, I think we've covered the gamut this week. I can't think of anything we didn't touch on. So,
see, McDonald's.
That seems to be the norm these days.
McDonald's, checked. Space, Facebook.
Yeah, something about birds being angry and Blackberry is dying. Yeah, we got that done. Yeah, I think we've gotten through all our normals.
We pretty much, and we even talked cake and pie. So yeah, we've covered it all.
We're going to come out with Braille bingo cards for you at convention, maybe, so you can actually play along at home and put your pieces on the bingo cards as we get through our favorite topics. And understand, this is the news. We don't go looking to cover this. This is just what happens in a general week. These are the news stories.
That's exactly right.
And no, we're not really coming out with bingo cards. That's a joke. Sorry.
No.
Just to clarify, because people will look for the actual cards.
Hey, where's the bingo card?
Yeah. But if you want to make them and release them on the web as a BRF file, that would be awesome. That would be cool.
You watch. Someone will do it now.
I know.
You know they will.
There are already soundboards out there of us, so I'm prepared for
Sarah Talk Trivia. We could definitely do that.
Oh, yeah, that was true, too. You know, but is it worse that I don't have the answer when I see those people write questions?
I have to tell you what happened to me this week on Twitter. This is I was visiting with Macy McLean, and she said something about, you don't like Starbucks. I was like, you got the wrong person. Well, you said so on a Sarah Talk podcast. I was like, I did not. I just find that podcast.
I beg to differ. Well, in episode 87, you clearly stated at minute 42:36.
What I actually said in that interview with Mike Calvo was that I preferred their lattes over their coffees, but she had me. She nailed me. Yeah, indeed. Absolutely.
Would you like to let's play the tape back into the left, back into the left? Yeah,
somebody edited that together. I never said those words in that order.
In public, what's worse though is, you know what I really loved in that outtake that you guys did, and it's like, that's the thing you want to bring up. Not that I was wrong, because you can bring up that I was wrong. I really don't want to relive the outtakes, Patrick and Derek already have enough blackmail material. Actually,
yes, they do.
Oh, well, another time, another week, and more Facebook. Next week, I'm telling you guys, we'll shoot for a Facebook-free zone.
Yeah, Patrick's going to tell you how to get a hold of us in case you want that information one more time. So until next time, have a great week, everyone.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Sarah Talk. Visit us at www.saratalk.com. Send us an email at resources@saratalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.